Welcome to episode 61 of Frank Reactions, the show where we help you profit from the digital era through better customer experiences online and off. My name is Tema Frank. Last week, we had an interview with Phil Wright, who is Lexmark's Director of Global Customer Experience and Enterprise Excellence, about how to improve customer experience in a large organization. If you missed that, you can check it out on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts, or go to frankreactions.com/60. This week, we're going smaller in both company size and focus. We're talking about how employee share ownership programs can help you build employee loyalty, empowerment, and engagement. One of the best ways to do that is, in fact, through ownership. And today's guest, Dan Oler, works with a company called ESOP Builders and specializes in such plans. So in the interview, we discuss some of the things that you need to think about if you're setting up and implementing an employee share ownership program or thinking about doing so, why there's more interest in this now than ever before, how to deal with tricky issues like how do employees react if the economy and your business isn't doing so well, and some of the benefits, not just in employee loyalty, but interestingly, the data shows even in customer loyalty. Enjoy the interview, and I will chat with you briefly at the end.
My name is Dan Oler. I'm an employee ownership specialist with ESOP Builders, which is Canada's number one consulting firm to help business owners design and implement employee share ownership plans.
And tell me, Dan, about why companies should consider having employee share ownership plans.
There are a number of reasons. One of the big reasons is that it helps employees to become more engaged in the operations of the business and to notice the bigger picture. They start to think more like owners, whereby they make decisions looking at the company in a much bigger way, seeing how it affects customer service, how it affects the loyalty to the business, how it affects attraction and retention of new employees. It just helps to develop the culture in a business so that the business runs more effectively, more efficiently, and so that people are more engaged, and it creates, I think, a little more happiness and fulfillment in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you recommend that if companies are going to do this, that they extend it to absolutely all their employees?
Well, that's one of the key considerations that we look at in the feasibility stage of working with a company to find out if this is even a good way for them to go, is to look at whether they want to have it a key person ESOP, which means that it may be only for 3 to 6 to maybe 10 key employees that are in certain positions, or it can be rolled out and designed so that it's available to all employees. And that's not that one way is right or one way is wrong, but each company is unique, and so it depends on, what's the best fit for that particular company.
So what sorts of considerations would you make then? Under what circumstances would you be more inclined to opt for one or the other?
Sometimes there are key management positions where the owner feels more comfortable to allowing those people to have a share of the company rather than to roll it out to everybody. An example, we're working with a company now that a large manufacturing company, and many of their employees are not minimum wage people, but lower wage people, and people who maybe aren't at the level of thinking where the owner feels comfortable that for them to own a stake in the company. So in that case, they're offering the ESOP alternative where to key individuals who are in those top management positions that are making the big decisions and marketing decisions and operations decisions, and those are the ones who are being able to buy into the company, buy shares. However, they've rolled out another program that we call equity value ownership plan, where all of the other people are able to buy in at a much lower level where they are able to, and they're buying units which track a share, but they're not legally exactly the same as a share.
So they still get, in effect, they get compensated if things go well, but they don't have a say in management. Is that...
Exactly. Yep. They're still key pieces. They still, in effect, you know, have some ownership level. However, it's at a little different level.
Okay.
Now, there are other companies where they just don't include other employees. They just include just those key people, and that's all there is. And I think more times than not, it's to get their feet into it, to try it, to test it out, and then often in another year or two, they will roll it out to more employees.
Okay. So what are, I mean, I've spoken to a lot of entrepreneurs, and they're often very uncomfortable with the idea of employee share ownership. How do you get them past that discomfort? Or do you? I suppose your company is just working with people who've already decided they want to.
Actually, the first step in the process that we use is called a feasibility audit, where we work with the owner to determine if they are ready for it, if it's even feasible for their company, because there's no sense going through the, you know, the steps to create one of these if it's not a good fit.
So what do you look for in that?
Some of the things is the owner has to have that mentality that they want to share this out with their employees, that they're willing to allow the employees to be actively engaged in the ownership. And I don't mean that the employees all of a sudden start making the top-level decisions. However, it allows them to sort of think about the business in a different way, to maybe see a little bit more of the financial statements and the financial things that are going on with the company, where they get a bigger picture of it. Some owners aren't willing to let that control go. It's an emotional,
right.
It's an emotional transition for owners. You know, they have, many of these owners have, it's like they've birthed a child, and all of a sudden there's that, you know, when do we want to let the, cut that apron string? And how far do we want that to go? So it's a real emotional challenge for the owner to go through that if they're not quite ready.
And what other things do you look for in the assessment of readiness?
We also do some in-depth confidential interviews with some of the key employees. So we learn about their readiness to become owners in a business and their willingness to take on that, and to find out if they would be willing to invest in the company and approximately how much they would be willing to invest in the company, and to kind of plant the seeds about what it can do for them moving on, because it really does help them to create a nest egg for themselves and their family as they move forward.
Most companies, if they're doing that, do they try to replace some of the salary that person would get, or is it on top of their current salary?
Well, primarily it's on top of the salary. The people continue to work and continue to make their wages, their salaries that they're making now. It allows them to buy into the company. So through their own cash resources, or sometimes it's through off their salaries, it comes off a deduction off their salary, or it can come through RRSPs or tax-free savings accounts, or could be through company loans, or it could be through bank loans. There are 8 different ways that the employees can actually finance the purchase of these shares. And so we help them to find the best way for them.
For the individual.
For the individual employee, yeah.
So in most cases then, are the employees offered all those choices in the plan itself, or is that something, a decision that's made, like what type of ownership will be possible, that decision's made before the plan is
enacted? Well, one of the beautiful things about this process, Tama, is that we engage a team of the employees. We call it an ESOP team, where we get together with them and have a day, sometimes a day and a half meeting, to create a plain English blueprint, which is kind of the rule book of how this is going to go. And so those employees are actively engaged in deciding some of those options for financing and for deciding how this whole share ownership piece is going to go, and how often these will be offered to employees, and who will be eligible, and some of the things that would happen. You know, what happens when there's retirement or termination, or somebody's retiring, you know, how all of this will affect it. And so the employees are involved with that whole process, which is another key, because then they really take ownership for it. It's their plan.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. So what happens when, I mean, I'm thinking, for instance, in Alberta, with oil prices having plummeted, a lot of companies that had been booming are now struggling, which means that the value of their company is going down, or that their profits are going down. What happens in terms of employee motivation when that happens?
Really, really great question. A couple pieces to this, Tama. One is that by having employee ownership, research shows that those companies tend to be far more resilient, so they will not drop as far as an ordinary corporate company. They will pick up and take hold and continue on much quicker and be able to withstand some of these downturns much more effectively and much easier.
And why would that be? Sorry to interrupt, but why would that be?
Possibly, and probably because these employees are treating it more like it's their business. So rather than just laying off people, the employees may come up with some great ideas for how the company can work through this. You know, it could be things like, you know, maybe everybody takes a slight reduction in their pay, or maybe they start to have more sharing of jobs through this, or maybe there's some new ideas for innovative ways to maybe diversify or change the direction slightly. There are all kinds of things that can happen when we really engage the employees in those decisions.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So tell me about, I mean, I'm assuming if you roll it out to everybody, obviously for a lot of the staff, you're going to have to do some training on how to understand finances and financial statements. Is that sort of one of the early steps?
That's exactly part. That's one of the key components in making one of these works, is that in that whole design and the implementation process, we work with the company to do some information sessions, some training sessions with the employees so that they understand how the plan works, the implications and the benefits for them, the tax advantages, because there are some, both for the owners and the employees, help them to understand financial statements, how to read them, and it helps the employees to think more like owners.
Do you find that typically lower-level employees are uncomfortable getting into this sort of thing?
It depends. I think that if the training is done well, and if there's already a culture in the organization of engagement and of collaboration and high trust, well, then employees, it's like a no-brainer. It's, well, of course,
sure,
this is offered to me. Absolutely, I want to be a part of it. If those culture pieces are not there to start with, it takes a little more time and effort to build that culture, to build the trust for them to really understand how this is a much bigger picture than just them, but this is about the company and them all working together. Then it can come together then. Pardon me, Cam, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, sorry, I was just going to say, I think it sends a real signal that management is interested in hearing them and involving them more. So it might help kickstart a sense of collaboration.
Absolutely, it is that way. And we like to have the owner or ownership group involved in all of the ESOP team meetings where they're designing this blueprint. We like to have them involved with these information meetings because it's a way for them to be there with the employees and to say, we're one of you. You know, this is something that we would like to do to have you share in the growth of this company, because we know that you as employees are a huge piece in making this company and keeping it successful. And so they want to share that out. And if the ownership group are a part of that, and if they're 110% for this, it's just a great process.
How common is employee share ownership?
It's not so common in Canada yet. It's growing.
Okay.
In the United States, it's hugely popular. In fact, there's government regulations and that makes it really, really beneficial for companies to go to employee ownership. And in Canada, not quite so much. However, there are some great tax advantages for both the employee and the owner if it's set up properly, and to help them to really, you know, move ahead where, you know, the employee has, once they get to retirement, they have you know, could have a huge big nest egg that's sitting there. I've got a great story about a friend of mine, an entrepreneur in Edmonton, who started an engineering company about 30 years ago with two other partners. And they set it up as employee ownership right from the start. And they sold this company about three or four years ago. And one of the owners shared this story about a lady that they hired as kind of their bookkeeper and their office administrator, one of the first people that they hired. And when they ended up, this lady just kept buying in every time that there was more shares offered to her. And when they sold the company, she had a $700,000 check.
Ooh, nice.
Something that most employees never will ever get.
Yes, yeah. So what are some of the pitfalls or common problems you see with implementation of employee share ownership?
Some of the problems that we see is when owners try to just figure out a way to do it themselves. And there's a process. And so if they get heading down this path thinking they can do it themselves, and sometimes they'll run into bumps and they just won't go forward. Many accountants and lawyers really don't understand it and the benefits of it. And so oftentimes they will try to dissuade owners from going this way.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the main challenges. Managing employee expectations is another one.
Can we talk a bit about that? What should people be doing or thinking about?
Sometimes when employees become part owners, they have different expectations. They think that now they're a partial owner, so they get different maybe advantages or things that they can do. And really nothing changes. The culture has to stay the same where people keep doing their job, but they just understand that there's a bigger benefit for them down the road. When sometimes these are laid out where employees buy voting shares, and so they think that all of a sudden they're going to be involved with the top-end decisions. Well, that's not the case. I mean, you think about buying shares in a company, say Bank of Montreal. You can buy stocks, you can buy common voting shares, but really you don't have any say in how they run the business. And this is the same way. It's a psychological thing where people are buying shares in the company, usually at a fairly small percentage basis. And so absolutely they're involved in, you know, making some decisions, but more than anything, they're just there as partial owners to know that they can help to grow the company with every decision they make every day.
Are there other pitfalls that you want to comment
on? Some of the challenges are if it's not set up correctly, bonuses or incentives to the employees can run afoul with CRAs, Canada Revenue Agency's regulations, where there could be some tax problems for the employee if these are not set up correctly.
Okay.
However, as long as it's done as a part of the design right from the get-go, you can avoid most of these challenges. Some of the challenges that occur in that regard are if the employee has to redeem their shares back to the company in a fairly short period of time. As long as the employee owns the shares for at least 2 years, it can minimize some of these challenges. And part of the setup with this that's really important is that these are privately held companies that we work with typically, where there's no liquid way to sell your shares. You can't just go sell them to your neighbor or somebody on a stock exchange. So we help the company to set up what we call a mini market, where once a year employees can have an option to sell some of their shares or maybe buy some more shares. It's like a, not an auction, but it's like a sale that goes on within the company for the employees who are involved in the ESOP. So they have some liquidity for their shares.
Okay.
So, for example, if one of the employees was going to buy a new house or they wanted to, say, take some lavish holiday and they wanted to liquidate some of their shares, well, they can put them up in this mini market where some of their fellow employees can buy some shares.
And so they bid on them, or?
It's not done like an auction. It would be a once-a-year event where any employee who wants to sell some shares will give notification of that, and any employees who want to buy more shares, they will give notification of that, and then it would be administered so that they're always bought and sold at fair market value.
And how do you determine fair market value?
That is a really good question, too. Fair market value for a publicly traded company is pretty simple. You know, you go onto the internet and you can find that out. For privately held companies, it's a little more tricky. So in part of the setup of this, we encourage companies to bring in a certified business evaluator who does all of their calculations, uses formulas to figure out the value of the company. That then establishes fair market value for the shares. So fair market value is a price that two people would buy or sell the shares in an open market, unrestricted market, where neither one was under any compulsion or pressure to buy or sell. And so that valuation is done initially when one of these ESOPs is created, and then they can use a formula for about 2 years to determine that value each year. And then about every third year, you need to have another valuation done to ensure that as changes are made, both internal and external, that that fair market value is fair and it's right.
What happens if an employee wants to sell some and nobody wants to buy them?
Well, then they can sell them back through the company, and it adds an extra level of complication. However, that's part of how this is set up to ensure that that can be done, and it can be done so that it still, you know, is advantageous for the employee and for the company as well.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about the differences between employee share ownership versus profit sharing? Because it seems to me that you can have profit sharing where they're not actually owners, but they're getting some reward based on how well the company's doing. Am I right about that or not?
That is correct, Gemma. And profit sharing can be a great way to incentivize employees. Typically, it's done on a cash basis and oftentimes once a year or maybe twice a year, depending on the company. And it can really help for motivation for the employees. However, research shows that those cash profit sharing plans or cash bonuses can actually lead to a mentality where it's expected,
right,
and which can be demotivating in the long term. Whereas these employee share ownership plans tends to create a different level of incentive where people see the bigger picture of the company. It's not just a cash that comes into the employee's hands, but it's a greater share in ownership and where they see that the value of the shares is growing as the company grows. Now, a really neat thing that often happens is that we can tie in, or the company can tie in a bonus plan or a profit-sharing plan with the purchase of shares. So, for an example, if the company is doing really, really well, rather than paying out a dividend, instead they can build in, they can pay a profit, share the profit with the employees, and a percentage or all of that bonus, if you call it that, can go towards purchase of shares.
Okay.
So it can tie the two together where it's not just an expected thing, but when it does come, it's a way for them to fund some of their purchase of shares in the next round.
Do you have any stats on how common it actually is right now in Canada or the US?
Well, let me give you some examples of some companies that you may know of that are employee-owned.
Okay.
What's one of your favorite airlines?
WestJet, and we know they're employee-owned, yes.
We know they're employee-owned, and they use that as a big part of how they market themselves.
Yeah, and part of their recruiting.
Well,
yeah.
In fact, research shows, here's a really interesting piece, research shows that employee-owned companies receive 3.5 times more applications than non-employee-owned. Turnover is significantly reduced by up to 200% when they're employee-owned. Productivity is 20% higher or more. Absenteeism is significantly less. Customer loyalty is 2 times the level of customer loyalty in non-employee-owned companies. Some of those things really are huge. Well, they're marketing pieces, but they're much more than that. They're huge bonuses or benefits to the company. Some other big companies that you might know of, have you ever heard of PCL Construction?
Yep.
They're 100% of employee-owned. In Edmonton, Clark Builders, have you heard of them?
Yep.
They're employee-owned. Some other companies, Flynn Group of Companies, which is a huge construction company, they're employee-owned. So there are many examples.
And most of those started as employee-owned? or that came later?
Most of these companies, it starts later. It would be really nice when companies are starting if this is the way they started. However, usually it happens sort of later on once the company gets to a certain stage. You know, they have a certain amount of revenue. And more than anything right now, we're seeing huge interest in this for transition. You know, because of the baby boomers, they're... Yeah. Are a huge number. Like, I think it's about 70% of the owners of small to medium-sized enterprises in Canada are looking to retirement within the next 5 to 10 years. 70% of those don't have any kind of a succession plan.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's a huge demand right now. This is a way for those owners to be able to transition the ownership to their employees over a period of time and maintain the culture and maintain those values that they've established and that are a part of the business, and to see that the ownership goes to those people who have really helped to make the business successful and will have the best chance of keeping it successful.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to sell a company now, and this is a way to have that transition happen almost seamlessly.
Yes, yeah. That's pretty cool. I mean, I've been an advocate of this stuff forever, and it's exciting to see that it is becoming a little more common, because I believe it is a huge benefit in terms of motivating employees and building a cooperative kind of culture.
Absolutely.
Is there anything that I should have asked you and I haven't, Dan?
I think partially in regards to that social aspect. You know, there's getting to become more and more interest in social enterprise and, you know, having organizations more socially and environmentally connected, and with that as being a bigger purpose. And this just ties right into that, because it ties in community, you know, making community, being your employees and their families, and, you know, looking for the well-being of all of it. And I think that it's, you know, there's the big buzzword about corporate social responsibility. Well, the philosophy fits so well with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate this. This is one of those issues that we talk a lot about being important, but rarely focus on how the heck do you go about it? And I know it is very complicated. So,
and for business owners and, you know, human resource people, managers who are looking, you know, how to do something like this. Some really great things to do are to do some research. There's the ESOP Association Canada that has a lot of great information. There's an organization in the United States called the National Center for Employee Ownership, NCEO. They're a huge organization that I've got a lot of research and studies that have been done on this. They hold annual conferences, one coming up in April. The ESOP Association Canada has started holding annual conferences, the next one in June in Kelowna. Great ways for people to go and learn about this, whether you're just interested or whether you're already into it. Great ways to connect with experts who know how to help this happen.
Cool. Very cool. Thank you. What do you think about employee share ownership programs? Have you ever tried it in your company or worked for a company that had it? Have you thought about it but decided against it? I'd love to hear your experiences. You can either leave me a message by voicemail, or I've at the moment got a little button on the website where you can just click to record a message and then we can play it back on next week's show. Or if you don't want to do that, you of course can always send me an email, Tema, T-E-M as in marketing A, at frankreactions.com, or contact me on Twitter, just at Tema Frank, or on LinkedIn or Facebook on the Frank Reactions page, whatever. Love to hear from you. And of course, as always, I'd be truly grateful if you would share this podcast with your friends and colleagues, and especially grateful if you would take the time to leave a little review and rating on iTunes. It would really help other people to find out about this show. So far, all the ratings we've had have been really good, but it would be really helpful if we had a few more of them. So thank you so much if you have the time to do that. Chat with you next week. Bye.